The mitzvah of Sipur is conducted in different ways. In the there's different aspects of Sipur on the night of Pesach. There's the idea of Maschal Bignusim Asayim B'Shevach. That's a component of Sipur. But that has to do with the idea that we're not just telling a story in a indifferent kind of mode, just for the historical, to establish a historical record. It's a certain context, and the context is praising God, Shevach. So that's why it's a Kiyum and Shevach, that Maschal Bignus, if you really want to praise, so the way to do praise, it's all, the praise is relative to the gnus, so to speak, to the degradation. Because the more a person recognizes how difficult the situation was that the person was in, and unfortunately that's what happens. People, generally speaking, don't appreciate, don't have the proper degree of gratitude. When they're in a terrible situation, so then they feel terrible and they reach out, they want help. But some people, of course, appreciate. But as time goes by, there's a tremendous tendency to downplay. Because there's a resistance in each person, there's a resistance towards being grateful to somebody else. You don't like that idea that you're, it's a blow to your egotism to recognize that how lowly you are. Nobody wants to recognize that. And nobody wants to be grateful to somebody else. Nobody wants to be in that state. So that's why you experience the phenomenon. When people are in dire need, they come to you and they praise you and they make it very clear how much they need you. And if you go out of your way to help them, so initially they express gratitude. But then something else happens. The feeling begins to wear off. And it's replaced by a different feeling. Very often it's replaced by a different feeling of, to the contrary, of denial. And they get upset with you because you remind them of something that they really want to forget. So the idea of praise, if you're going to praise, and we're gonna, in this case it's praising God for the redemption from Egypt, then the only way you could do so is by a recognition of the degradation. And if you don't recognize the degradation, so what are you praising for? That's why you have the concept of Maschal Bignus U'Masayim B'Shevach. That the Haggadah, since the Haggadah also has a Kiyum of Shevach, that's part of the obligation, so that's why it has to be Maschal Bignus. And there's a Machlokas in the Gemara, what exactly the Gnus is. Is it the Gnus of Avdus, that we were slaves, or a different kind of a Gnus, interestingly enough? The other one is the one who says, "Mitchila Ovdei Avodah Zarah, Hayu Avoseinu." That this is the gnus. The physical avdus is not the ultimate gnus, but the ultimate gnus is the fact that that people are steeped in idolatry. That our forefathers, if we trace it back far enough, were idol worshippers, and that's the underlying, or that's the metaphysical idea behind the Exodus. For the sake of, it's not a matter of physical freedom. We don't look at physical freedom as an end in itself. But because if a person is physically free and is steeped in falsehood, so basically they're enslaved. It doesn't appear that way. The person doesn't sense it. In terms of the sensibilities of people, how people sense things, they don't recognize that. A person looks at freedom, like in the United States, we're free. You go to these oppressive countries and people aren't free. But they're looking at freedom as a different phenomenon. Freedom just means to do whatever you want to do, to act out your own desires. That's how they look at freedom. And the Haggadah is saying that that's not really freedom in terms of the human situation. Insofar as you're a human being, to be free has a different concept. To just be animalistically free, to do whatever you want to do, is not the value of freedom. The value of freedom is only if a person is in line with his nature, is fulfilling his purpose. If he's not fulfilling his purpose, he'll be thwarted from fulfilling his purpose, even though he's not chained up in a physical way, he's still not a free person. So that's the idea of Mitchila. But that's Maschal Bignus U'Masayim B'Shevach. Then you also have the Sipur through the mitzvos. That the study of the Tameh HaMitzvos itself is a form of Sipur, instruction. Because all the events that occurred were the basis for the formulation of certain mitzvos, which are intended to reflect the ideas. So that's why we have later on, that's expressed in Rabban Gamliel Hoya Omer, Kol Shloma Shlosh Dvar Me'elu B'Pesach, Lo Yotze Yidei Chavoso. That whoever did not recite the basic idea of these three things, Pesach Matzah Marah, did not fulfill his obligation. So most of the Rishonim learned that it's talking about the obligation of Sipur. And that is to say, to explain the Tameh HaMitzvot. That's in each paragraph over here, is an explanation of the Tameh HaMitzvot. So you see that on Pesach night, you're obligated to delve into the mitzvahs halayla. And to delve into the mitzvahs halayla and to discuss the ideas behind them is a form of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. There's another idea of Sipur, and that is, I think, something which most people overlook. And if you take a look at the Rambam says that it's a mitzvah l'saper, benisim v'niflos. It's a mitzvah to tell the story of the miracles and the wondrous things that God did for us on the night of the 15th. That's the time to do the mitzvah. And then he goes on to say that the sipur should be done, obviously, with other people, primarily with a child. And then, of course, you have to know how to relate to the child in accordance with his level. So he takes the simple level and, you know, a higher level and so on and so forth. So that presupposes that a person is engaged in a subjective sipur, to get involved, immersed in telling over the story. Now, you don't find that in the Haggadah. And the reason why you don't find that is because there's no way you can't objectify it. That's a subjective phenomenon, to engage in a retelling of the story. And that's each person in accordance with his ability, and of course each person in accordance with who they're having the Seder with. Therefore, at a certain point in the Haggadah, people should stop and somebody should tell over the basic story. Seems to me that the appropriate place to do that would be after Yochel Me'Rosh Chodesh. Because Yochel Me'Rosh Chodesh is the conclusion of a number of paragraphs that we say after the Manishtana, whose purpose is to establish the basics of the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. That last paragraph, Yochel Me'Rosh Chodesh, is an analysis of the Zman HaMitzvah. What mitzvah? The mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. After Yochel Me'Rosh Chodesh, you've established the basis for the fact that there is a mitzvah to tell the story of the Yetzias Mitzrayim on this night. So then, at that point, you should stop and tell the story. Engage! Engage in the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. The next paragraph, Mitchila, over the Avodah Zarah, is fulfilling the objective of Maschol Begnus and Messiah Meshevach. There's two versions. We do both. This is the version which holds that the real Gnus is not the physical enslavement, but the real Gnus is the fact that our forefathers were steeped in idolatry. You have Tseyu Lamad as well. And that is, the idea of Tseyu Lamad is another aspect. As I said, there's a number of different aspects of the Sipur, of how we do the Sipur. There is Tseyu Lamad. And that is, we go through a parsha in the Torah, which, on the basis of the Drush, on the basis of Drusha, establishes the main points that took place. So that's Tseyu Lamad. The reason we do that is because we're also supposed to engage in the telling of the story through what? Yeah, you have Baruch Shem after Chazal Yisrael. That's after Mitchila. Because Mitchila is talking about the degradation and how God extricated us from the degradation. So Baruch Shem after Chazal. Then we praise God who kept his promise. That God was Chishev as Aketz. And that is, he worked out, so to speak, the exact moment of when the Jews would be redeemed. And Baruch Shem after Chasal Yisrael, that is a shevach. We're praising God, who's a shomer haftacha, who manifests himself to us as one who makes promises and keeps them, as is manifested by the Exodus. Everything, you know, the foundations are in the Exodus. That there God calculated the end. It was all calculated, and God kept his promise and redeemed us, not just redeemed us, but at the exact moment when the end had been calculated. And then it cites the source. K'moshe Omar li'Avraham Avinu b'bris ben Absarim. As God had revealed this to Avraham in the bris ben Absarim. And it quotes the pasuk. Yadoa teda ki ger yezrach b'eretz lehem ve'avadim v'inu osam arba me'o shana. So there's the chishev ha'keitz. V'gamas ha'gay asher yavodu don anochi. And also the nation that will oppress them I will judge. That's an extremely important idea. Of course, the first question is, why does God have to tell us that Gamas Agai Asher Yavodu Don Anochi, that he will judge the nation? What's the relevance of that? But once that is stated, this raises the question that in and of itself, it seems to be a Tarta Nisashi, because God is predicting, God is foretelling that this is going to happen. Therefore, it must happen, it would seem. You can't say it's not going to happen, because then that would imply a defect in God's knowledge, which you can't maintain. Thus, it would seem that this all was scripted. It had to happen, predetermined. If that's the case, so then the idea that the Egyptians are just part of some plan over here, some part of fate, some destiny, so why are they being punished? If it's something which happened outside of the will of God and something which they did and so on and so forth, so okay, they were unjust, they deserve punishment, that's for sure. We believe in a moral universe. People are responsible for their deeds. But here the problem is, why? It would seem, at least, it would seem, the implication is that this is something which is going to be enacted, has to happen. If it has to happen, so were the Egyptians at fault. If God predetermined that they should do it, so then it wasn't an expression of free will. So why would they be judged? Of course, that's the key. That's the question. This question is discussed. It's actually a machlokas. I mean, there may be more than two positions, but the two famous positions would be the position of who?
I think the Rambam.
Position of the Rambam. The Rambam discusses this in Hilchos Tshuva, and the Ramban. The Ramban on the pasuk itself raises the question as to why were the Egyptians punished? And they give two different answers. Questions being raised of other nations throughout history oppress us. Will God judge them too? That is a different kind of a question. However, in those cases, we assume that those nations acted of their own accord. They used their free will and chose to do that which is evil. So they deserve to be punished. When and where and under what circumstances, that's the matter of divine providence. When does God intervene to punish those nations? That doesn't have the same problem, because there they acted of their own accord, their own free will. In this case, once you have the haftacha that a nation is going to afflict the Jews, at least superficially, it would seem as though this was something that was already set. Thus leading us to the question, if it was already set, are they guilty? The Rambam gives his famous answer, the Ramban gives a different answer. That paragraph of Baruch Shem after Chasal Yisrael is quoting the Bris Ben Absarim, and it ends with V'yachrei chen yetzu b'rchush gadol, that afterwards, after the enslavement is over, they will leave with great substance, so to speak, with wealth. It's a reference to the wealth. And that's a significant part of the story. And it seems to come out of nowhere. Like, who's really concerned about that? Why is that an issue? The main thing is the Jews will be freed from the enslavement. And when God gives Moshe the instructions for the Jews to prepare for the Pesach Mitzrayim, for the Korban Pesach, so then, Dabar Nobi Yozne Am, That becomes a major theme. And that's what God tells Moshe too, at the snare, that that when they leave, they'll leave with wealth. And then it becomes, then the question is, how does it come about? And it's interesting enough that it comes about, that the people themselves have to go and ask the Egyptians for clothing and jewelry and so on and so forth. And then it tells you that God placed a favor. There was a complete change in attitude from the Egyptians to the Jews, and they gave them these gifts, and so on and so forth. So that becomes a very significant theme. Of course, the question is, what's the significance? What does that have to do with anything? Why is it so important that they go with rechush? They go out with substance. And why is it important that it come about in this way? For example, if it was that important, so why didn't Moshe impose this on Paro? Compensation. The leader of the Jews would negotiate with Paro, and they would give. Why Abedafka to Dabar Navi Yazne Am? We're just reviewing the Vishe Amda. First thing to do is to take it apart, the elements. So the first idea is a little bit difficult to understand, just on the simple meaning. It's a reference to the Bris Bein Hapsarim, and it's saying that it is that covenant, the Bris Bein Hapsarim, which stood firmly for our fathers and for us. That's the first idea. And then it says that Lo Echad Bilvad, not just one, has stood Aleinu against us to destroy us. Eloshep Choldovador, but in every generation, Omdim, they stand up Aleinu L'chaloseinu, to destroy us. That seems to be a bit redundant or repetitive, because the first statement is saying that it's not just one. Okay. That means that throughout the course of our history, we've had more than one enemy. Okay, but that's not the same as saying in every generation. Then it says, then we say, well, okay, that's another idea, but if you're going to say that, so then why do you have to say Shlo Echad Bulvad? Because Shlo Echad Bulvad is a less of an assertion. We've had enemies. We're not the only one. Other peoples have also had enemies at different points in time. It's not exclusive to the Jews. And then we go further. We bechol dor v'dor, in every generation. They have stood up against us to destroy us. V'HaKadosh Baruch Hu matzilenu miyadam. And we have haftacha, that God saves us from their hands. Interesting, it starts off with the Bris Bein Hapsarim, which was Amda Lavaseinu. But at the end, it says, V'HaKadosh Baruch Hu matzilenu miyadam, God. So of course it's God, obviously. Well, the Bris is not something which can save you. The Bris doesn't have power. It's God. So if that's the case, why isn't the entire paragraph a reference to God? The who? That God. God protected our fathers and us and God. It's interesting. It starts off with the Bris Bein Hapsarim. That's what has stood for us. And in illustrating it, it mentions that they've stood up against us in every generation. God saved us from their hands. So if it's God, what do you need the Bris Bein Hapsarim? What's the connection between the two? But at this point, you have to recognize that you cannot really understand this part of the Haggadah without going back to the Bris Bein Hapsarim, because the answer is contained in the Bris Bein Hapsarim. So we have to study that, and then what we're saying over here will have more meaning. Getting back to the flow of the Haggadah, now you have a new aspect of Sipur, which is called Tseu Lamad. And that's a very significant idea. That telling the story, recounting the story, can only be done through a certain mechanism, and that is the Torah. Without the Torah, we wouldn't know the story, nor would we even know the basic ideas, all the concepts behind behind the what takes place, specific events, the significance of events. All this is possible only because of the Torah, Torah Shebichsav, and Torah Shebal Peh, the Drush. Now this establishes exceedingly important ideas that without the Torah, we really would have no way of knowing. And even with the Torah, you see another very crucial point. Even with the Torah, that is with the scripture, as they call scripture, Torah Shebichsav, the written Torah, you still would not really have much of a way of knowing what took place. The real story, because the narrative, the superficial narrative, is not the story. That's just highlights. And you don't know the underlying, the real story. You can never really write, it's very difficult ever to write the real story. So you have an account, but if a person doesn't know the underlying factors behind it, why this happened and what this really represents and so on and so forth, that is the real story. So therefore, what we're highlighting over here is the absolute importance of the, to really get into the story, you have to go through the Torah. Torah Shebichsav, the written, in accordance with a specific type of drush, a specific type of exegesis, which is from the Chachmei HaTorah, that only the Chachmei HaTorah can provide. And this requires limud. This is limud. Just to understand on a simple level requires a certain amount of limud. Certainly, to understand it properly requires thought, what these drushes are. And every term, Vayered Mitzrayim, they went down to Egypt, Onos al pi ha-dibur. They were coerced through God's command. Vayagar Sham, Malamech Layorid Yaakov Avinu Lishtakev Mitzrayim, and so on and so forth. All of these are significant ideas. And basically, it's telling us that the ultimately, the only way to really get the story is through Limud HaTorah. Those sections of the Torah that deal with the story and the accompanying drashot. Thus you have, we've established there's narrative. You yourself are supposed to tell over the story. And we have the recounting of the story through the study and the exegesis of those psukim in the Torah that deal with the story. And we also have a study of the mitzvos halayla, because those mitzvos reflect the ideas, vital ideas that pertain to the story. Those are the three ways in which we engage in fulfilling the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim.